It's time to wake to sleep with the number one sleep authority, Sleep Science Today, and Sleep Better Tonight.
We all hear myths about sleep, and sometimes it gets confusing to know what's true and what's not true. You can find pretty much anything you want to find on the internet today, but coming to Sleep Science Today, we are going to talk with Dr. Ishan Shu, and she is going to help us figure out some of these myths about sleep. So I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. This is Sleep Science Today. We have Dr. Ishan Shu, who is an adjunct faculty at Standard Sleep Medicine Center and founder of a multilingual mental health practice called Mind and Body Garden Psychology. Welcome, Dr. Shu.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So we obviously talk all about sleep here, and there's so many misperceptions out there. And, you know, in my own practice and working with clients, when they first come in, you know, they tell me all these things they've tried to do to improve their sleep. And sometimes, you know, you can clearly hear that they got that off of the internet somewhere, and it's just not true stuff. So I figured today we could talk about myths and kind of give the reality behind them. So with that, I am going to start off, and I'm going to give you one of the most common ones I hear, which is everybody needs 8 hours of sleep. And if I don't have 8 hours of sleep, something must be wrong. What's true? What's not there?
That's a very common question. And one thing I learned in sleep field is sleep is such an individualized thing. There's no such thing that everyone need absolutely the same length of hours to sleep. So in reality, everyone's different. Someone may just need 6 to 7 hours per night, and they're totally fine. Their brain, their body can only create that many hours of sleep, and they can function so well, so energetic during the day. But others may need 8, 9, some people may even need more than 9 hours per night of sleep to feel more recharged during the day. But we want to be careful. If you constantly need a lot of sleep, like you constantly need 9 to 10 hours per day to sleep, and you still feel like it may not be enough for you, there may be some indications, something underlying wrong in your health. So actually, sleep more is not necessarily a good thing. And also, there's type of small percentage of people in the world, we call them short sleepers. So genetically, they just cannot create that many hours of sleep, and they don't need many hours sleep. For short sleepers, they may just need 5 hours sleep per day, and they function perfectly. So you can see everyone's so different. And right. The problem is if we force someone who can only sleep for 6 hours, we force them to lay on bed for 8 hours or more, we may actually create insomnia problems for this person.
I see. So you mentioned, you know, the people who may be regularly needing 10 hours or more of sleep, there might be something else going on there. First thing that came to mind for me was maybe they've got sleep apnea and they're not getting good sleep, and so they're trying to kind of catch up with it. What types of things might be going on in the background?
Yeah, sleep apnea, definitely a big thing, because their sleep quality is poor at night. It's not about how long you sleep, it's about the sleep quality you're getting. And there are many other sleep disorders. Like, I treat insomnia mostly, but there are 90 more other type of sleep disorders in the picture. They could all lead to your body need more sleep. But besides sleep disorders, we may have other medical conditions that your body may need more sleep, more rest, try to recover from that. Maybe an injury you got, maybe some like medical procedures you went through, or some underlying health issues. It could be very complicated, different type of medical or genetical problems that you are not aware of. that need your body try to recover through sleep, but it may not actually be able to really do that, and that need medical condition, medical attention.
Right, right. And I guess there's also the other part here, which is, you know, we talk about this generic concept of 8 hours that people think about, but different stages of life, we're going to have different needs for sleep. So a teenager or a newborn is going to be very different from someone who is in their 80s or 90s.
That's a very good point. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes. So babies need a lot longer sleep. So two-thirds of their time possibly are spent in sleep. As we grow older, like children, teenagers around 10 to 18 years old, a lot of teenagers actually need more than 8 hours sleep on average. It's just based on big data. But unfortunately, nowadays in our school system, a lot of teenagers, they are not getting enough sleep. They are sleep deprived. Not only how long they sleep, but also teenagers tend to be more night owls, so they tend to sleep later. That's another problem. But as we enter adulthood, our body needs a little bit less sleep. As we get older, at older age stage, we may still be able to create a certain amount of sleep, but we may experience more night weakenings. So the total sleep hours still reduce, but in a right. different way. So right. It's a very solid point you are mentioning. Different life stage, sleep change. That means our expectation of how what means a good sleep should change accordingly as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, you talk about the more middle of night awakenings as people age. One of the things that is so common for me with my patients is when I get patients who are, let's say, 70 years old and above, roughly, they have sleep changes such as more middle of the night awakenings and also waking earlier than they used to the other parts of their life. And so obviously, you know, there's this concern, oh my gosh, I can't sleep the way that I used to. I'm getting up so early. What's wrong? What's happening? Is that kind of your experience as well?
Yes, totally. And my suggestion would be, you know, it's not quite rational to expect your body sleep exactly the same when you are at 70 years old compared to when you were 20 years old. So sometimes we need adjust to the change in our body, and maybe some medical conditions get in the way as well. Daily activities also different. So try to understand how I sleep right now based on where I am in my sleep stage, whether we can build up more acceptance to this type of sleep instead of thinking, oh, I won't go back to how I slept 20 years back. That right. may be hard.
Right, right. Yes. And that's pretty much, you know, the biggest part there is once they can accept the fact that their body changes over time, that it's natural to wake up earlier, then they're a lot more comfortable, I think. So good point. All right, let me go to a different one here. How about, well, you know, I can stay up all I want because I'll catch up with my sleep on the weekend. Can people really catch up with their sleep?
Yeah, it's a common myth. We all think we can catch up on sleep, but there are lots of research showing actually we cannot really catch up on sleep that well. In sleep field, we have this concept of sleep debt. You accumulate your sleep debt, right? Sleep actually spread out every day how much sleep your body and brain gets. You use to form a type of function during the day. If you sleep deprive yourself purposely throughout the week or for several weeks, and then you count on several days to catch up. Actually, we find out through different research, your function, your cognitive function level does not go back to the baseline. It takes more than 7 days sometimes for your cognitive level, your function to go back to your original baseline. And it's really hard. It's also not quite possible for people to just take 7 or 10 days, sleep a lot, try to catch up. So I think more reasonable way to think about this is, yes, if you don't sleep enough, try to catch up on your sleep, maybe can help a little bit, but it won't restore 100% of what you lost. Whatever sleep you lost, you lost. And impact your cognitive functioning, also impact our immune system. It need take a lot of time to recover, and sometimes it's very hard for it to recover fully back.
Right, right. Yeah, I heard somebody describe it one time in a way that I really, it made it easy for me to understand, which is, if you were to go for a week and you restricted the amount of food that you ate all week, so you ate a very little amount of food, and then you said, well, I'll catch up on the weekend. I'll eat all the food that I didn't eat on the weekend. The weekend comes, you may eat more food because you might be hungry, but you are not going to eat the amount of food that you restricted during the week. It would just be impossible for you to do. Same thing with sleep. You'll catch up on some, but you're not going to catch up on all of it, like you were saying.
Yeah, I love this metaphor. Yes, exactly. We always talk about you only have so big of a stomach and how much food you can really fill in, right? For sleep, in a way, similarly, your body and brain can only generate so many hours of sleep per day. Even when you are super sleep deprived for a while, you can maybe sleep several hours more, but not that much more. And another thing we don't know is what the quality, sleep quality look like when you try to catch up on sleep. That's not right. Something you can just feel. So it's just, you never, whatever you lost in sleep, you never can get it back. And right. Your brain, your body just gonna carry on with that. I remember many, many years back in the sleep science field, there were very famous research talking about sleep deprivation. And they find out for both human being, and then they did this on rats, on animals. After long term of sleep deprivation, your mental health actually suffer a lot. Your function really dropped. Even when you do that to animals and you also shift the schedule of the animals for a while, they just die early. It's just impact your health in a lot of different ways. So we have to be careful about what is important in life, right? Does it worth it to deprive your own sleep for other things?
Right, right. Well, yeah, and I know that so many people these days are much more in tune to dementia and other types of things, and recognizing that sleep is such an important part to, you know, our overall health. It's, you know, it's not just sleep compartmentalized, but it impacts us totally.
Yeah, just mention one quick thing. On the other end, we notice clinically, if you can improve your sleep, it actually helps to speed up your recovery in many other conditions, for example, depression, anxiety, different mental health issues, and some of your medical health, like physical health issues. So sleep can be a really good factor to consider. It helps a lot.
Right, right. Well, we are at a point to take our first break, so I'm going to take a break. But when I come back from the break, I have some additional myths that I'd love to talk about. So stay tuned on Sleep Science Today. We'll see you back after the break.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Be sure to visit sleepsciencetoday.com for access to all of our channels and special offers.
Sleep Science Today. And sleep better tonight.
All right, welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Dr. Shu, and we're talking about myths. And here's one that I hear a lot. Well, you know, I'm not tired, but I know I need to sleep. So what I do is I just drink a glass of wine and that puts me to sleep. Pro or con?
So wine or any liquor is so interesting. There's a lot of research around how a little bit of wine can help us relax before bedtime. That's true. But the problem is really after you fall asleep. In the process of sleeping, any liquor you drink before bed, they're going to start being digested by your body. And they're going to become different things, different chemicals in your body. Some of those actually is not quite good for our sleep quality. Some research showing drinking wine or any type of liquor before bedtime actually increase the chance of our sleep apnea symptoms when we fall asleep. Mm. And sometimes the liquor you drink before bedtime, including wine, can cause more weakenings or poor sleep quality after you fall asleep. So just be careful. I think it's not about black and white, yes and no, necessarily like drink or not drink. It's about a balance. What is too much for you? Mm-hmm. What is appropriate amount make you feel like just right for you to relax? Or it's a routine. It's a bedtime routine. It's associated with mental soothing. Then just a little bit, half glass, for example, possibly okay for you. It's just you need to understand what works best for your body.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you. So there's a related one, which is, oh, well, I just go to the drugstore and I buy some melatonin gummies and I'll just take that right before bed and it'll knock me out. True or false?
Does it really knock you out, right? In my clinic, I see a lot of people talk to me, melatonin does not work for me. Or there's some people eat a lot of melatonin, and then in the mornings they feel so drowsy. They like just cannot wake up. They thought they did not sleep well, but melatonin has a lot of problem. First, melatonin is something our body naturally release, so it's everyone. We all have that, and actually our body only release such a tiny dosage per night, and it's something to help signal us it's dark, it's nighttime, be ready to go to sleep. So melatonin itself is not something to knock you down, put you to sleep. It's not the same thing as sleeping pill. It's really just something in your body to signal you about being prepared for sleep. Right. that our body, I think last time I read the research, our body only release about 0.08 milligram melatonin per night. So that's not a lot. But if you buy melatonin on the market, in any drugstores, it's huge dosage. It's like 5 milligram, 10 milligram. Mm-hmm. So that means a lot of people already release enough melatonin. You cannot sleep. You cannot fall asleep. It's not because you don't have enough melatonin. It's because many other things. You worry about things, right? Your sleep habit is not very healthy. So, but you take melatonin, you take too much, much more than what your body naturally release. That means it's going to be in your system until the morning. It's still going to be in your system. So that caused a lot of problems in the morning. You cannot really wake up. You don't feel like refreshed. And then you blame sleep. You don't blame melatonin. The next day you do the same thing. Yeah. So I think that's a problem. Another thing is several years back, I think there's a research paper published by a Canada researcher team. They studied hundreds of melatonins on the market, but they find out whatever labeled on the melatonin bottle does not really match how many melatonin exactly in the pill or gummy you are taking. Sometimes the dosage of melatonin in that little pill or gummy can be 400 times more or less.
Wow. Wow.
And it also not only has melatonin in it, it has many other weird stuff combined together into that melatonin you are taking. So you actually don't know what you're exactly taking. It's not the same as what's labeled on the bottle. I think that's another problem.
Wow. Well, that's certainly something to be aware of. but yeah. The fact, like you said, you go into the drugstore and typically you're right. You're going to find 5 milligrams and 10 milligrams. And both of those are way too much. And then, like you said, people get caught up in this cycle because they think I didn't sleep well, so I need more melatonin. When it's the fact that you're taking too much melatonin, which is causing you to have the brain fog and, you know, sleepy during the day. So yeah, that's a very common one. I think that's a huge myth out there that people think that, well, I take that and it's like a sleeping pill, and it is absolutely not. So, all right, let's try another one. I love to watch TV in bed because it helps me relax so that I can fall asleep.
So I would say this does not work for everyone. It depends. I'm not those kind of very rigid sleep psychologists. So you definitely cannot do certain things. It depends on what you need. So for people who watch TV before bedtime, I think what they are trying to do is to do some wind down activity, which is a great thing. We all should have some wind down activities because our brain is not a light switch. It cannot just switch off, okay, sleep. We do need a period of time to slowly wind down from the busy mind during the daytime to a more calm mind so we are ready to sleep. For some people, watching TV or be on their phone or listening to music is a way for them trying to wind down. And that's a good thing, but you have to figure out the activities you're engaging in. Are they really help you wind down, or they are making you more awake, more excited? TV or any phone, like social media stuff, depends on the content. For example, are you watching horror movies right mm-hmm. before bedtime? So that possibly going to be too much, right? Because that's going to stimulate your brain, make it very excited right before bedtime. But if you are watching something very soothing, you really enjoy, you feel like it helps you build up your sleep drive further, make you feel more sleepy, you are more ready to go to bed, maybe that's not such a bad thing. You just have to be careful. About the content. Another mm-hmm. thing is the blue light we all talk about. So right. Research showing TV, actually the blue light is not as much as the phone or other electronic device you're holding on your hand. So TV is distance away, but it's still going to have some blue light. Blue light is a signal. It suppresses the release of melatonin because it triggers the brain believe, oh, it's still not dark enough. It's not ready. You don't have to be prepared for sleep, yet.
Right.
So it's a signal to wake us up somehow. And our eye is a very important signal receptor. So we use light to decide to regulate our sleep center in our brain. That's the problem of blue light. So another problem for TV is, are you laying on bed to watch it, or are you watching it in your living room? It's slightly different. Because for someone, if you already have insomnia issues, we want to really help you build up sleep, bed equals sleep, this equation. We want your brain understand when you lay on your bed, it's for sleep or sex, not anything else. Mm-hmm. So that helped to train your brain to be ready to sleep. Every time you go on bed, your brain naturally, right, help you to sleep. But if you lay on your bed watching TV and sleep and eating and talking and do all kinds of things, your brain will get confused. You can see there's a lot of moving piece involved in this TV watching. And we need tailor it out based on different individuals' needs to understand, is this a good thing for you, or this actually get in the way of a high quality sleep for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, and along the same lines is the sort of the follow up question here, which is, so if someone is in bed and they've got insomnia, for example, so they're laying in bed, they're awake, and they say, well, I just need to try to sleep better. And so they lay there in bed and they toss and they turn and they try to sleep. I still don't know what try to sleep means. But what's going on with that? Is that a good thing, if that they should stay in bed and just keep trying to sleep?
Based on what you described, very likely it's not a good idea. I think that goes back to our effort does not really lead to a good result. So I see a lot of people with insomnia. They try so hard. They go to bed early. They ask the whole family to be quiet to accommodate their needs for sleep. And in the morning, they don't want to get up. They try to lay on bed for longer time. So basically, they are trying to create longer time to be on bed. Hopefully, this can help them gain more hours of sleep, right? But this kind of effort really harm our sleep. Clinically, we find out when people do that, they actually sleep worse. Their sleep hours actually reduce because it causes a lot of anxiety in your brain. For insomnia, I think one big factor to stop us from sleeping is sleep anxiety. So that type of anxiety directly relates to our ability to sleep. So if you allow yourself to be on bed for that long period of time, but your body and brain can only generate a smaller chunk of sleep, your brain will get so anxious, it will not trust your own ability to sleep. It will start going to this survival mode and start trying to analyze and make up theories that, oh, your body must be broken and you can never get enough sleep. Your day going to be horrible. Whatever, all this makes things worse for you. So mm-hmm. In this kind of situation, we actually want to help people do the opposite. You should leave your bed and only go to your bed when you are really sleepy. So we won't help you shrink the time or restrict the time you're actually on bed, and make sure when you're on bed, most of the time you're asleep. That you can sleep, you can increase what we call sleep efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a way to increase your sleep quality first. So even you're on bed just for 3 hours, but you're asleep almost for 3 hours, that's a good start. Let's start with that and slowly spend your sleeping hours. So I always think sleep quality is over sleep quantity mm-hmm. in the treatment of insomnia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the like you said, it's like if you're not sleeping and you know that you're not going to be sleeping, it's better to get out of bed so that you train yourself that the bed is only for sleep, not for laying there trying to sleep and building anxiety. Exactly. Exactly what I, you know, deal with all the time. Okay, related to that is another question then. Many people these days buy sleep trackers. They've got an Apple Watch or they've got a Fitbit or, you know, whatever it is that they buy. And these sleep trackers give them these sleep scores. And some people get very, very upset if they don't have a perfect sleep score. What's actually going on there? What should people be aware of?
I think sleep trackers is not for everyone. So what we saw is some people start using sleep trackers and then they start developing performance anxiety around sleep. And there's a new word in the field called orthosomnia. It's basically a type of insomnia caused by trackers because you are trying to sleep in a certain way. Then you are fitting your own sleep into that structure. Think that is good sleep. If I'm not there, I need to do whatever I can to increase my sleep, shift my sleep to that frame. It's very hard to control it, I think. When I treat insomnia, I would ask all my patients stop using sleep tracker for several weeks until their sleep gets better. And then, because once you don't have insomnia anymore, you have more control over things, you feel more empowered, then you may be able to keep a healthier relationship with your trackers. But when you have sleep problems, when you have some difficulties around sleep, plus sleep tracker, it will make it really complicated. And performance anxiety will make us not able to perform. We see that a lot in sleep because deep down, you cannot control your sleep, right? Anyone here listening, if you ever been on bed, tossing around, you could not force yourself to sleep. You know that you cannot force yourself to sleep. So if you want to control your sleep too much, then sleep tracker may not be for you, or at least not for you temporarily. Sleep tracker has another problem is right now, the consumer side of sleep trackers, they are improving a lot over the years, but it's still not 100% accurate. You cannot rely on it to tell an accurate story about your sleep. And also, you don't know how to explain some of the data. And certain percentage of deep sleep, does that mean your deep sleep is poor? From a professional's point of view, maybe not. It may be normal within the normal range. But for consumers, they may think, oh no, my deep sleep is not enough. I have to do something about it. That creates another level of anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a big thing. The anxiety and insomnia tied together. So trying to do better is actually making you do worse because you're increasing your anxiety. So yes, important point. So we need to take our second break here. So we're going to take a break and we will be right back on Sleep Science Today.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, Our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Be sure to visit sleepsciencetoday.com for access to all of our channels and special offers.
Sleep Science Today. And sleep better tonight.
All right. Welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We are talking with Dr. Shu, and we're talking about sleep myths. How about this one? Yeah, I know people tell me that I snore, but snoring is harmless. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I have a strong opinion about this because my own family member snores. And I remember as a child, a young child, I was like so annoyed. I was like, after two doors away, why am I still hearing this so clearly at night? I could not fall asleep. And I also, growing up, thought it's normal because a lot of people snore in China around when I grew up. People are so interesting. When something happens a lot around us and nobody questions that, we think it's normal. Until I went to Stanford and studied sleep, behavioral sleep medicine, then I realized there's something called obstructive sleep apnea. And the reason why we snore is because our airway collapses at night when we are asleep, especially when we are in REM sleep, when we are dreaming. So all the muscle got relaxed and the airway tend to collapse and we cannot breathe well. So our body trying so hard to get air through the airway. And that's how we are making sound. So It's necessarily not a healthy state we are in when we sleep. That actually leads to more problems, more pressure to the heart, to the brain, and our oxygen level drops in our blood. So a lot of this lead to severe health consequences if you snoring years after years, right? And After I studied sex therapy recent years, I also learned that if you snore for many years, when you get to older age, and it may even impact your erectile dysfunction. And so it's just to have a lot of different type of sleep health consequences for people. So be careful about snoring. If you snore or your partner, your family member snore, I strongly recommend you try to go to a sleep doctor, check it out, do a sleep study, figure out how severe this is. Is this something you should pay attention to? Is this something you should put intervention around it as soon as possible?
Yeah. And that's so true. And, you know, I think one of the biggest issues is the person who snores, they're asleep. They don't hear themselves snore. They don't realize they're snoring. And then if their bed partner says to them, wow, you're snoring really loudly, they don't think it's a big deal because, you know, they don't hear it. And then I think also they don't realize that there is a lot of harm that can come from it, just like you were describing. So it is so important, you know, if you sleep with someone who snores, encourage them to be tested. You can even do home sleep apnea tests. You know, you just wear a little thing at night. It's not a big deal, but it's really important to know Because if you have obstructive sleep apnea and you're not treating it, you just heard about all the problems that you can have. So that's an important one. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. How about this one? I want to make my bedroom nice and warm so that when I go to sleep, I'll feel comfortable, almost like I'm in the womb. Tell us about bedroom temperature.
Yeah. So it actually surprised us when you look at the research. Your temperature, cooler bedroom temperature is better for sleep. Of course, you should not freeze yourself. But as we fall asleep over the night, our core body temperature is dropping. And around 2 hours, 2 or 3 hours before we wake up in the morning, it drops to the lowest point. And then our body temperature starts to increase slowly, and then we got woken up. So if your sleep environment is too warm or even hot, it may wake you up in the middle of the night, because temperature actually is a wakening cue for us. Our body does it naturally. And especially for women going through menopause, that's also an issue. They have hot flash, and that's a symptom. And that kind of warm, hot feeling in the middle of the night wake up them often. So you don't want to sleep in too hot a temperature. And if you have a smart house, it's better for you to adjust it automatically. Maybe at certain point in the night, the temperature can drop 1 or 2 degrees. And when you wake up, you can adjust it, or you can set it up that way.
Hmm. Interesting. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So the message there is cooler is better than warmer when you're sleeping. So, okay. Here's one that I saw going around the internet for a while, which was people who believe that they can train themselves to need less sleep. Somehow it was a badge of honor or a machismo type of thing that I don't need to have so much sleep, I can fight it. What's going on there? True? False?
I see that mostly around entrepreneurs. I interviewed some very famous entrepreneurs in America a long time ago. He was so proud of getting up at 5 a.m. in the morning. And I think there's a whole club about 5 a.m. rising entrepreneurs somewhere on the internet. I would say depends on where you are in your life and what your body really needs. From a scientific point of view, I want to encourage everyone to think about what your body really needs. If we can sleep matching our body's natural needs, that's actually the best. That's the highest quality, most refreshing, and we possibly rest the best. But I think the problem is many people use this kind of restrict your own sleep as a way to in exchange of success, productivity, more work. And if your body needs more and you're restricting that, that's really a type of sleep deprivation. Mm-hmm. And as we talked about earlier, sleep deprivation is actually quite harmful. You cannot catch up on those kind of sleep. It's also harmful to you long term. It impacts your health, impact how long you can live, your longevity. And it's a typical, I think, philosophy. People think other things are more important than sleep. So I can sacrifice sleep to gain other things in life. When we restrict our sleep, not only health-wise, we're going to suffer, but emotionally, we're going to suffer. Mm-hmm. So when I treat couples, I do couple therapy sometimes. Research shows if we don't sleep enough, we tend to be more irritable. We have less empathy to our partners. We we have a lower threshold of tolerance to our children, to our family members. It's just the whole person may be more grumpy. And grumpy people is hard to be around. So right. It's just a spiral down to causing a lot of problems. I think it's all related. I think recent 2 years, more research from Stanford and many other research team in the US showing sleep actually become one of the key predictor of suicidality. That's a heavy topic, but it's really think about mental health and whether you still want to live a meaningful life, right? If you don't sleep enough, and that severely impact your mental health and just open a door for many, many other possible negative consequences.
Right, right. Wow. Yeah, that's, the deep sleep that we get is where so much good stuff happens. And, you know, whether we talk about mental health, whether we talk about entrepreneurs, even the, you know, all of the ideas and things kind of come together when you're in that stage three deep sleep, where it's not going to happen when you're awake trying to force yourself to think through things. So if you give yourself that opportunity to get the sleep that you need, your brain is going to process all those things that it needs to process, and you don't have to force yourself. But I think a lot of people miss that.
I just want to add one thing about that. Not only deep sleep is important, every sleep stage are important in their own way. For example, when we talk about mental health, REM sleep, which is what the sleep stage when we are dreaming, is very important to regulate emotions. Because when we sleep, that sleep stage help us to process our emotional memories. And so it's a very important stage of sleep. Deep sleep also important, especially important for teenagers, for children, because deep stage of sleep is the stage our body release growth hormone. That's when you can grow bigger, taller, and that's very important for younger people. And of course, it helps you, you know, recover your body tissues, everything. So it's important for everyone. A light stage of sleep actually is quite a lot in our daily night sleep. More than 50% of our each night sleep actually are light stage of sleep. They're important as well. So I just want to point that out, is every structure, like the whole architecture of our sleep, every piece of that has its unique function. And right. It just overall sleep is important for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's a very important message. And that's the message that we're going to end up leaving our show with, because we're out of time for the show. But this has been very, informative. I think we've covered a lot of the common questions that people have about sleep out there. And I appreciate your detailed answers and giving us the information that we need. So I'll just ask if there's any last words you have before we close out the show.
Yeah, it depends on how much time. There's one thing I want to mention. Another myth we did not cover, which I find very common among Asians and many others, are the dream part. Like, when is when to sleep? And when is whether dreaming and waking up in the middle of the night is a good thing? I just want to spend a little bit of time working on that. I just want to let you know, waking up in the middle of the night is very common for almost everyone. So don't be afraid of that. Normal adults wake up more than 10 times per night, no matter you remember it or not, it's normal. Regarding the sleep window, everyone is different. That's another philosophy I will always want to pass out to people, is following your body's natural rhythm. If you can, if you're a night owl, then maybe your natural sleep window should be go to bed late and get up late. If your work, your daytime activity allows it, that's the best type of sleep for you. You don't have to force yourself sleep like others if it's different for you. So just overall, I think sleep is an individualized thing. I think it's very important for us to understand how our body prefers in sleep and then decide accordingly what we can do to adjust it accordingly. If you are stuck, you are having problems, there are a lot of great resources out there. Find a professional, find a well-trained sleep doctor, sleep psychologist to help you, you know, optimize your sleep. I think resources are out there. But don't scare yourself too much. Don't put too much effort in the wrong direction. With the right guidance, sleep issues can be solved. You can recover.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you for that. That's all important information. We have to close out our show here. So thank you all for joining Sleep Science Today, and we'll see you on an upcoming episode. Thank you, Dr. Shea.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Sleep Science Today, your number one sleep authority.
Sleep Science Today.